The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening to the technicians of the Singapore telephone company, Singtel, who are monitoring the show today because of the frightful reception that you all have been having in recent weeks. And I've had a constant stream of people going through my office trying to find out what's going on here, and they are joining us tonight, and I hope they will learn something other than technical considerations, but in any case, welcome to the show, my friends. It is the 24th of June 2011, and we are coming live from Singapore through the offices of Progressive Radio Network in New York City. Well, in the United States today, it's not just the economy that's crumbling. The entire fabric of society is coming apart. Literally, almost wherever you look, you can find rampant corruption in America. The federal government is corrupt. The state and local governments are corrupt. The corporations are corrupt. And unfortunately, average Americans seem to become more corrupt all the time. As corruption becomes widespread in America, trust is breaking down. It is very difficult to know who to trust these days. But a society cannot function without trust. So what are we going to do when all the trust is gone? The SEC just announced that J.P. Morgan has come to an agreement to pay out $153 million to settle charges related to the sale of a controversial collateralized debt obligation back in 2007. It turns out that a hedge fund that helped pick the underlying assets for the CDO also bet very heavily that it would fail. J.P. Morgan marketed the CDO as a good investment when they knew that it was garbage. Robert Kuzami, the SEC's top enforcement officer, summed up the charges against J.P. Morgan this way, and I quote, J.P. Morgan marketed highly complex CDO investments to investors with promises that the mortgage assets underlying the CDO would be selected by an independent manager looking out for investor interests, end of quote. So is anyone going to go to jail for this? Of course not. In fact, not a single bank executive has gone to jail for anything that happened during the financial crisis. So how are we supposed to have faith in the system if nobody is ever held accountable? Are little slaps on the wrist supposed to make us all feel better? The truth is that what J.P. Morgan did was far from an isolated incident. The system is totally sick and corruption is everywhere. Cronyism has become so endemic to the system that nobody really seems bothered by it anymore. For example, there was an article recently in the New York Times entitled, Politically Tied Lawyers Win Jobs Handling Foreclosures in the City. You can Google it. From June the 20th. In 2009, a judge in Manhattan had a lucrative appointment to hand out, oversight of a Diamond District building that was drifting into foreclosure. Nearly 600 people in Manhattan had been approved for such work. But the job went to a lawyer named Mark D. LeBeau, who is the husband of Patricia E. Harris, Mayor Michael Bloomberg's most trusted aide. Since then, Mr. LeBeau has earned $352,000 in fees, more than $5,000 a week, according to court records. It sure is nice to be politically connected, huh? It's not by accident that so many of the politicians and their family members become increasingly wealthy. But it's not just among the wealthy and powerful that we're seeing an increase in corruption. All over the United States, thieves are stealing copper wire, train tracks, and even drain covers. People are stealing stuff that nobody would even dreamt of stealing in the past. Just consider this from the Atlantic area, and I quote, "Kids in two Atlanta communities won't have their neighborhood pools to help beat the summer heat, at least for now. Thieves used what is believed to be sledgehammers to bust walls and break fixtures in bathrooms at Adams and South Bend parks to steal copper, brass, and steel." End of quote. This is how desperate people throughout America are becoming. In another example from the Atlanta area, thieves recently busted into a Southwest Atlanta beauty supply store and took off with $30,000 in hair extensions. America is becoming a very crazy place. When times get really hard, people will do whatever they feel they need to do in order to survive. One elderly man down in North Carolina was so desperate that he actually robbed a bank so that he could be put in prison and be given free health care. 59-year-old Richard James Verone walked into an RBC bank in North Carolina, handed a clerk a note demanding $1, and sat down and waited for the police to arrive. It turns out that he has a growth on his chest and two ruptured discs, but he doesn't have any health insurance. So he robbed the bank so that he would get free health care in prison. Ladies and gentlemen, the grim fact is that your country is rapidly coming apart. As I have said here so many times before, the American dream is in an advanced state of decay. Once upon a time, such as Detroit, Michigan, were the envy of the entire world. Today, they are a joke to the rest of the world. Many of your biggest cities have become war zones. There are dozens of homes that you can purchase in Detroit right now for literally next to nothing. For example, 4769 Liberal Street in Detroit is listed for sale on Zillow for just $100. Not that anyone would actually want to live there. Many homes in Detroit are literally being ripped to pieces by looters, vandals, and thieves. Of course, many Americans are just taking their cue from the government. Washington, D.C. is drowning in so much corruption that it's almost hard to describe. One of the biggest offenders in Washington, D.C. is the Federal Reserve. In a recent article for Rolling Stone, reporter Matt Taibbi exposed some of the folks that the Federal Reserve sent money to during the financial crisis. Quote, "The Fed sent billions in bailout aid to places like Mexico, Bahrain, and Bavaria. Billions more to a spate of Japanese car companies. More than $2 trillion in loans each to Citigroup and Morgan Stanley, and billions more to a string of lesser millionaires and billionaires with Cayman Islands addresses." Quote, "Our jaws are literally dropping as we read this," says Warren Gunnels, an aide to Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. "Every one of these transactions is outrageous. Come on, did America really need to send billions of dollars to millionaires and billionaires in the Cayman Islands in order to save the U.S. economy? Something really stinks, but since the politicians are too gutless to authorize a comprehensive audit of the Federal Reserve, we may never know what has been going on. So who does get probed in America today? Well, none other than the American people. The ridiculous airport security measures that have been put up with have got completely out of control. in the name of national security. America now allows security goons to feel up the women and the children. Recently, as you probably know, one video of a 6-year-old girl having her private areas touched in public by the TSA went viral on YouTube. The little girl was apparently also drug tested. How perverse is that? A 6-year-old girl has to go through all that, but the corruption of the Federal Reserve and the big Wall Street banks is allowed to continue? Even the mainstream media is deeply corrupt. As I've mentioned before, they love to get the American people all riled up and obsessed with the latest celebrity news or the latest Twitter scandal. But they purposely ignore some of the most important news stories that are happening because they don't fit with the agenda that their corporate owners are trying to push. Of course, one of the worst examples of corruption in America is the U.S. Congress. A new scandal involving Congress seems to erupt almost weekly, and almost everything Congress tries to do ends up being corrupt in one way or another. And the sad thing, of course, is that Congress isn't even working most of the time. Most Americans have no idea how much time off members of Congress get. That is why all this corruption in America is such an important issue. There is absolutely no sign that anyone is interested in reversing this trend, which is why society will continue to break down. When faith in a country's major institutions is gone, it is incredibly difficult to win back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, here we are. This is Richard Martin. This is a dark and sultry evening in downtown Singapore. And we are coming to you at 10:15 p.m., and we are able to receive your phone calls, ladies and gentlemen, on our toll-free number at 888-874-4888. Once again, the toll-free number for your calls is 888-874-4888. Please feel free, call in. Let's have your views, opinions, rants, questions, and other items of interest to our toll-free number at any time during this hour. You may also email in those same contributions, and the email address is rm@gfawd.com. That's RM for Richard Martin at GFAWD. That's Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design.com. Once more, rm@gfawd.com. And finally, my own phone number, my direct line, which is a area code in Sarasota, Florida, is area code 941-441-1682. And you may use that to call me if you would like to discuss your private financial and economic issues with me. And please feel free to call, leave a name and a phone number if I'm not available, and I will call you back. Again, my private direct line in Sarasota, which will be sent forward into Singapore, no extra charge to your good selves, is area code 941-441-1682. All right, well, did you know that the TSA has stormed public places with absolutely no motive whatsoever 8,000 times this year in the United States? Americans are really going to have to decide if, in the name of homeland security, they are willing to allow these TSA operatives to storm public places in their communities with no warning, pat them down, and search their bags. And they'd better decide quickly. Bus travelers were shocked when jackbooted TSA officers in black SWAT-style uniforms descended unannounced upon the Tampa Greyhound bus station in April, with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies and federal bureaucrats in tow. A news report by ABC Action News in Tampa showed passengers being given the signature pat lockdowns. Americans are used to watching the Transportation Security Administration screeners perform at your airports. Canine teams sniffed their bags and the buses they rode. Immigration officials hunted for large sums of cash as part of an anti-smuggling initiative. The TSA clearly intends that these out-of-nowhere swarms by its officers as community transit centers, bus stops, and public events become a routine and accepted part of American life. The TSA, as I said, has conducted 8,000 of these security sweeps across the country in the past year alone. TSA Chief John Pistol, interesting name, told the committee on June the 14th, they are part of its VIPR, that's VIPR, or Visible Intermodal Prevention and Response Program, which targets public transit-related places. All of which is enough to make you wonder if we're watching the formation of a civilian national security force President Obama called for on the campaign trail that is just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well-funded as the military. And those are President Obama's words, not mine. The VIPR swarm on Wednesday, the TSA's largest so far, was such a shocking display of the agency's power that it set the blogosphere abuzz. In a massive flex of muscle most people didn't know the TSA had, the agency led dozens of federal and state law enforcement agencies in a VIPR exercise that covered 3 states and 5,000 square miles. According to the Marietta Times, the sweep used reconnaissance aircraft and multiple airborne assets, including Black Hawk helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft, as well as waterborne and surface teams. When did the TSA get this powerful? Last year, Pistol told USA Today he wanted to, quote, take the TSA to the next level, building it into a national security counterterrorism organization fully integrated into U.S. government efforts, end of quote. What few people realize is how far Pistol has already come in his quest. This is apparently what the next level looks like. More than 300 law enforcement and military personnel swept through a 100-mile stretch of the Ohio Valley alone, examining the area's industrial infrastructure, the Charleston Gazette reported. Federal air marshals, the Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Coast Guard, the FBI, the Office of Homeland Security, and two other dozen federal, state, and local agencies teamed up to scour the state's roads, bridges, water supply, and transit centers under the TSA's leadership. And you know, what is remarkable about these security swarms is that they don't just involve federal, state, and local law enforcement officials. The TSA brings in squads of bureaucrats from state and federal agencies as well. Everything from transportation departments to departments of natural resources. The TSA had received no specific threats about the Tampa bus station before the April sweep, reporters were told. They were there, quote, to sort of invent the wheel in advance, in case we have to, if there ever is specific intelligence requiring us to be here, end of quote. And that's Gary Milano with the Department of Homeland Security in an ABC News Action television report. Continuing, this way, us and our partners are ready to move in at a moment's notice. End of quote. Federal immigration officials from Customs and Border Patrol swept the station with the TSA looking for, quote, immigration violations, threats to national security, and bulk cash smuggling. How the bulk cash smuggling investigation related to national security was never explained. We'll be back, Milano told reporters. We won't say when we'll be back. This way, the bad guys are on notice. We will be back, Milano told reporters. God. The TSA gave the same vague answers when asked about the three-state sweep this week. That sweep wasn't in response to any specific security threat either. The purpose was to, quote, have a visible presence and let people know we're out there. According to Michael Cleveland, Federal Security Director for TSA Operations in West Virginia, who told the Gazette, it can be a deterrent. Well, it might be, if Americans are willing to live this way. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not making this up, you know. You might think that this is something out of some future, fantasy program on television, but it is not. This is the reality of your country today. Well, very, very grim. Okay, well, many people are asking me where I think the stock market is going, and I instinctively refer them to the Japanese market, which has been going down since the late 80s. And, you know, the U.S. economy has seemed to be following the same trend as the Japanese economy of the 90s, so I always let people know that I cannot discount the possibility of a long and drawn-out bear market, not unlike what we've seen in Japan over the last 20-something years. The Japanese example has taken the market down 75% so far and counting. How anyone can say that Japan today is in a less serious situation than America of the early 1930s beats me. But if America's market was able to lose 87% from top to bottom at that time, is there any reason to suppose that Japan's could not do likewise? And if it does, we have a long way to go on the downside there yet. Remember that stocks have gone nowhere for 11 years in the United States. We have, in other words, a lost decade behind us, just like Japan had by the year 2000. The International Herald Tribune states, and I quote, long unemployment lines in U.S. cities could last years, study finds. And then the following subhead, report says many areas may need until 2020 to reach pre-recession levels. Kind of looks like Japan's second lost decade looks like a shoo-in for America, doesn't it? So how do we get to a lost decade for the first 10 years of the new millennium? U.S. gross domestic product didn't hit $10 trillion until about 2000. Now it's about $14 trillion. Looks like some bit nice growth there, doesn't it? But hang on, we know that a lot of that was phony debt-fueled growth. It was phony because it raised living standards to a level people couldn't really afford. Or to look at it another way, it drew on earnings that hadn't happened yet. And maybe it never would. It was a lie, a scam. If a United States private company made representations of that, it would be prosecuted for fraud. So how much of that $4 trillion worth of GDP is real and how much is phony? We don't know, but we do know that the federal deficit is about $1.5 trillion, which is as phony as a $3 bill. Subtract that, and you have a gain of $3.5 trillion over 10 years, or about $350 billion per year. So adjust that for population growth. Subtract phony private sector debt-fueled growth, too. Properly adjust for inflation. What do you get? You get a lost decade. Here's a follow-up to my comments. Okay, we need to take a break. I understand things are not sounding good, so we will take a break, and I'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
The most most incisive analysis on the state of our planet from a black left perspective, join me, Glenn Ford, and my colleague, Nellie Bailey, at Black Agenda Radio, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. We bring you the full scope of reality as we and our interlocutors see it every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Black Agenda Radio, the place to get oriented to the black left worldview on the Progressive Radio Network.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Philosophy Talk is changing to a new time every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Ken Taylor and John Perry discuss both contemporary and classical philosophical theories and apply it to problems we face every day with a lighthearted and laugh-out-loud approach. Philosophy Talk every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hotel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
That was a progressive moment. You know you can't have just one, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, well, sorry about that. You engineers, as you can tell, you've got the message, I hope, that there are still problems here, and I'm glad to be able to, well, I'm not glad, of course, but at least you have witnessed the shortcomings. Okay, here's a follow-up for my comments on war last Monday. In a recent interview with Newsweek magazine, outgoing U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates lamented about not wanting to be part of a government that didn't have the resources and gusto to support a trillion-dollar military. Quote, "I've spent my entire adult life with the United States as a superpower and one that had no compunction about spending what it took to sustain that position. This a different time. To tell you the truth, that's one of the many reasons it's time for me to retire, because frankly, I can't imagine being part of a government that's being forced to dramatically scale back our engagement with the rest of the world." What a pathetic ass. There are, however, some interesting conclusions to draw from this statement. For one, Gates exemplifies the mentality of these career politicians who hold the highest positions of leadership. It's as if they feel entitled to spend without having to deal with the inconveniences of fiscal reality. And if that's not possible, the poor little spoiled darling will just flounce off in a huff and take his toys and go home and cry on mama's lap. Second, like most politicians, Gates seems completely disconnected from the real world. To Gates, out of control spending beyond your means is what it takes to maintain superpower status. In the real world, invading other countries and engaging in bottomless pit-spent defense projects is a recipe for disaster. Defense is the single biggest line item in the U.S. budget, and along with Medicare and Social Security, these three programs completely dwarf the rest of the budget. Congress could completely eliminate the Department of Energy, which it should, and only save $28.9 billion. Today, this is just a rounding error. Gates recognizes that the U.S. government is going to be forced to live within its means, and that defense is going to get the axe. unthinkable. But with an official budget of nearly $1 trillion, not counting supplementary off-the-books packages, there's more than ample room, aside from the obvious droves of unnecessary overseas bases that cost billions. The U.S. military maintains expensive, antiquated systems like aircraft carriers and surface-to-air weaponry. It might have been useful in World War II, but today represent a financial sinkhole with little or no tactical benefit in modern warfare. To give you another example, military units often procure necessary resources from local suppliers. This could be anything ranging from food to print cartridges to diesel fuel to remodeling services. Curiously, supply clerks don't have the freedom to buy from whichever vendor gives them the best price. They must patronize specially approved vendors. In wartime, fiscal accountability goes out of the window. And the amount of money flushed down the toilet with these specially approved is staggering. The simplest item, like a pack of AA batteries, can be sold to the military for 10 times market price in wartime. It's similar to the medical field. You take something normal like a plastic cup and it costs pennies. You make it a medical cup and it costs $25. This is nothing new. In his memoirs, Ulysses S. Grant recounts similar observations when he was a young lieutenant in the Mexican War. Grant describes how American traders and Mexican smugglers supplied U.S. field units with horses, mules, and other necessary provisions. He remarks that the animals were typically worth $5, though the army paid $8 to $11 each. Such is trade, such is war, he writes. The official reason for this war was a supposed invasion of Mexican forces onto U.S. soil. There has never been any evidence to suggest that this ever happened, and historians acknowledge that the U.S. government manufactured this story in order to draw the nation into an imperialistic war. Oh, I know, it hardly seems imaginable. Grant describes the resulting war with Mexico as, quote, the most unjust war ever waged by a stronger nation against a weaker nation, following the bad example of European monarchies in their desire to acquire additional territory, end of quote. He further argues that the war caused strain on the South's agrarian economy, fueling the causes of the Civil War fought some 15 years later. As Grant reflects, and I quote, nations, like individuals, are punished for their transgressions. We got our punishment in the most sanguinary and expensive war of modern times. End of quote. Oh, and by the way, his book, The Personal Memoirs of Ulysses S. Grant, is available for free download on Amazon. Grant's words ring true. Actions do have consequences. Yet when a nation's leaders still seem to think that they require a $1 trillion military budget for its, quote, engagement with the rest of the world, despite 10 years of war and fiscal insolvency, it's a safe bet that the consequences won't be rose petals and unicorns. All right, well, let's have a look and see if we have anything to say. All right. Nope. Nothing right now. So let's talk a little bit about Harold Camping. Well, Harold Camping has a pretty dismal track record. Three times now, the 89-year-old California evangelist has been very public about predicting the end of the world. Somehow, he managed to convince legions of followers that his complex calculations were accurate. Camping was obviously very wrong all three times, in addition to other times he was wrong in making smaller predictions in his radio broadcasts. We can, however, forgive Mr. Camping's miscalculations for the precise date and time of the world coming to an end, writing them off as twaddling, harmless entertainment. Why? Because Harold Camping doesn't control the money supply for the largest economy on the planet. You see, there's another guy whose track record is about as impressive as Harold Camping's. His name is Ben Bernanke. And every time he opens his mouth with a prediction about the economy, it's wrong. Dismally, dreadfully wrong. Like Camping, Mr. Bernanke and his cronies make complex calculations, culminating in impressive-sounding prophecies for future rates of inflation and GDP growth. He makes predictions about economic recovery in 2012, and declares emphatically that a housing slowdown will not affect the broader economy. Camping is written off as a joke, a lunatic that makes good fodder for late-night variety shows. Bernanke, though, is still taken seriously, despite having been completely wrong over and over and over again. 2 days ago, he conducted his second public Q&A session with a completely underwhelming press corps. A five-year-old could have hit a home run with these slow-pitched softball questions. They might as well have asked him about his favorite color. At one point during his remarks, Bernanke admitted that he had no idea why the economy was still so soft, though he was quite certain that growth would return in 2012. The only thing that's quite certain is that this man has no earthly idea what he's talking about. Consider this. Arguably, the best definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. The Oxford American Dictionary further defines insanity as extreme foolishness, i.e. lacking good sense or judgment. Bernanke admits that the economy is soft and that inflation is concerning. This after keeping interest rates at record lows and conjuring a most unfathomable amount of money out of thin air. And yet his chief solution going forward is to keep interest rates at record lows and continue conjuring money out of thin air, even though he admits to negative results. Same thing over and over. Check. Lack of good judgment. Check. Hey, perhaps Harold Camping should control the money supply. Things would be definitely more entertaining. And based on his latest prediction for the end of the world, we would at least be able to surmise when the last round of quantitative easing would finally end. I've said before that I believe future historians will look back on this period with utter incredulity. Modern society celebrates itself as the pinnacle of civilization. Yet these free and democratic nations, supposedly ruled by the people, give total control of their livelihoods to a small handful of crackpots. Well, Bernanke is considered the world's leading expert on the Great Depression and how to avoid another one. His strategies have been followed not only in the United States, but also in Europe, Japan, and many other countries. So analysts around the world were shocked on Wednesday by the gloomy economic outlook announced by the Federal Reserve. And Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke at his second press conference ever. According to Bernanke's theory, the world should be recovering strongly by now. This is the same kind of forecast that we've been hearing for 3 years. All bad news was always transitory, and the V-shaped recovery was always going to start next quarter. However, on Wednesday, a very somber Bernanke said that the economic outlook, especially for jobs and housing, is significantly worse than his last outlook just 2 months ago. His gloom was confirmed yesterday by new data that indicates that new home sales are still falling, while unemployment benefit applications are still increasing. In 2007, as the financial crisis was beginning, I used to criticize Ben Bernanke's great historic experiment, how he was applying the lessons of his academic studies to his management of the financial crisis. I used to say over and over again that his strategy couldn't possibly work. Now, nearly 4 years later, this has proven to be true. Bernanke used to believe that the Great Depression could have been avoided simply by the Fed lowering interest rates. If that wasn't enough, then the Fed could inject money into the economy by other means. Now, after almost 4 years of interest rate decreases, stimulus packages, bailouts, and quantitative easings, we can see that Bernanke's theory has apparently been disproven. Bernanke used to believe that deflation is impossible with a fiat currency because the central bank can simply print more money, preventing deflation. This has already been disproved by the experience of Japan, which is still in a deflationary period more than 20 years after its real estate and credit bubble burst and the Tokyo Stock Exchange crashed. Bernanke used to say that he didn't believe in bubbles. That was before the huge real estate and credit bubbles that are now fully, finally, widely recognized as bubbles. In 2004, I was highly critical of Bernanke's claims to the effect that the economy was being saved by Fed policy statements, that the mere publication of the Fed's view of the economy is keeping the economy under control. I considered and still consider this claim by Bernanke to be extremely bizarre because it completely ignores fundamentals. The economy is controlled by economic fundamentals, not by words published by the Fed, no matter how enlightened and sagacious those words might be. Needless to say, this view by Bernanke has been disproven many, many times over. In 2005, I criticized Bernanke for possibly the most bizarre claim of all, that the reason for America's huge public debt is that there's a global savings glut in other countries, as if they were at fault for America's debt. This is exactly the same kind of behavior that the corresponding missionary and lost, respectively, generations did in causing the 1929 crash and the 1930s Great Depression. Once the bubble starts bursting, the Fed can't print money fast enough to replace the money that's being destroyed through deleveraging. All that money that was created through the debt, the credit bubble, is still being destroyed, and the amount of money being inserted into the economy is less than the amount being destroyed, so deflation occurs, fiat currency or not. Ben Bernanke's great historic experiment has been watched, analyzed, and copied around the world. So far, it can be said the experiment has not worked anywhere near as hoped. You know, you can predict that it will turn out to have been a total failure in view of the gloominess and desperation of Ben Bernanke himself on Wednesday. It's possible that even he realizes it. Either way, the day of judgment cannot be far off. You can use the law of mean reversion to prove that the tech, real estate, credit, and stock market bubbles that we've had have to burst with devastating consequences. And then you can use the law of diminishing returns to show that attempts to reinflate the bubble by means of bailouts or other liquidity techniques have to fail. The problem is that each bailout has a smaller effect or diminishing return than the previous one had. And so you have to substantially increase the size of each bailout for it to have the same effect as the previous one. We've certainly seen this in Europe last year. And with $14.5 trillion in debt, America is going to see the same thing before too much longer. Okay, well, I understand that our reception is still pretty good, so, hey, I'm not complaining. Let's take a couple of emails. I have one from Kevin Sierra in Newfoundland, New Jersey, who wants to inform the listeners about silver coins. He says, Richard, a number of listeners have been asking you about silver coins recently. To avoid being taken advantage of when buying or selling any coin, listeners must know two things. One, the grade of the coin, and two, the approximate value of the coin. Coin grading is not easy. However, the following free website is available to help simplify the task. So I will give you this twice, ladies and gentlemen, if you are interested enough to want to take note, this is the name of the website. http://coinauctionshelp.com/coin_grading_guide.html. All right, once more, the website, the free website for you to get to know about grading silver coins as follows. http://coinauctionshelp.com /coin_grading_guide.html. Okay? Simply click on the type of coin you're interested in. A series of photos of the coin in different grades will come up. After you determine the grade of your coin, use the value guide the website offers to get an idea of what the coin is worth. Also note, eBay is one of the most popular sites to buy and sell coins. Listeners should always check eBay before buying or selling any coin. Best regards, Kevin Diarra, Newfoundland, New Jersey. Well, thank you very much for that, Kevin. I hope the listeners who are interested in silver coins will take note. Well, the Beltway's budget debate may have hit the proverbial bump in the road, but Main Street is looking more cracked, chipped, and decrepit than ever. America's 4 million miles of open roads and highways, which, by the way, would wrap around more than 160 times the world, is crumbling. The American Society of Civil Engineers 2009 infrastructure study gave America's roads a D grade. And with state and local budget battles raging, no one knows when and if money will be available to fix them. A 2010 report from U.S. PIRG, that's Public Interest Research Groups, found that 45% or 150,000 miles of interstate highways need repair, and more than 70,000 bridges are decaying. The Transportation Department estimates that the nation would have to come up with $100 billion a year simply to maintain current road conditions, a $30 billion increase from current levels. Metropolitan areas tend to have the biggest problems, with 63% of urban roads rated in fair, mediocre, or poor condition. Northern cities that are frequently pummeled with extreme weather are especially prone to cracked and eroded asphalt. The longer a pothole or crevice goes unrepaired, the more expensive it is to fix. The cost to resurface 1 mile of road with asphalt can run about $50,000, whereas major rehabilitation can cost $500,000. Both are better options than starting over completely. 1 mile of brand new concrete runs from $700,000 to $1.2 million. Not a happy state of affairs, I should say, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, well, let's take Steve Kruger and his usual inimitable smile. Who has this to say? Richard, I watched part of Bernanke's press powwow, and when he got to the part about begging our new Congress to raise the debt limit, the stock market took a dump. Our newly elected Congress is there to stop the spending and for no other reason. I see Congress as the most spineless, fraudulent gathering of leaders ever assembled under one roof. They are easily scared and easily led, and will be intimidated by Bonehead Boner, who is an old line GOP carryover and far removed from the Tea Party and its ideals. It also could be that Bernanke is looking to avoid QE3 by using Congress to inject $2 trillion into the budget, thus keeping further Fed money creation alive and well. At some point, the spending must stop. But I don't think we hit that point in the eyes of Congress yet. Richard, when you're hooked on nicotine and smoke 3 packets of cigarettes a day, and you announce to the world your intention to quit, and your plan is you take an oath in which you promise to take one less puff a year, and in 1,000 years you will be smoke-free. In response to this plan, every smoker in the room applauds your fine idea. This is the stage we are at now. The snowball is picking up speed. I really do wonder how this ends. Around 400 AD, Rome handed its existence off to the Vatican. Who do you think we will hand this off to? Steve Kruger. That's a good, nice rhetorical question, my good friend Steve. I don't have the answer. I wish I did. Okay, right. So, 9.5 minutes left, according to my good, trusty engineer, and we shall make the best use of it that we can. Oh, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I ought to mention, one of the things that Bernanke said, I did listen, actually, to his press conference, because I really am very curious to know how this man is going to survive with his ego and prestige intact after having led the world through a hideous experiment. But one of the things that he did say, which as far as I know has not been picked up on by anybody, which is really amazing to me, he explained that he felt that money market funds could be in some danger. He mentioned that a lot of these money market funds are invested in European sovereign debt, and that obviously if that goes up in smoke, then some of these money market funds will be in dire straits. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know what I've been telling you about money market funds. It's been a long time since I actually mentioned them. But stay away from money market funds unless they are specifically U.S. Treasury-based. And for those who are new listeners to the show, since I last mentioned this, and I expect there are some of you who have not heard me talk about money market funds, when you express to your broker your desire that your spare cash should be invested in only T-bill money market funds, you must emphasize that inside the money market fund must exist some, 95 to 98% of treasury bills. What happens is that very frequently they are labeled as treasury bill money market funds, but that's just the carrot. The reality being that there's all kinds of federal agency paper in there, like Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. You need to be sure that your federal treasury bill money market funds are just that. Treasury bill money market funds exclusively, or quasi-exclusively, and you do need to check that. Unfortunately, for those of you in IRAs who don't have a choice, this is very serious, and I haven't come up with a solution as yet. But frankly, if things get bad in Europe, we will have to revisit this whole question about what to do with cash in IRAs. Because I will be much more vociferous about that towards that time. Anyway, so there you have it. Money market funds, make sure they are T-bill only. money market funds. Well, remember what a bad bet mortgage debt was? But in 2005, the more mortgage debt you had, the smarter you thought you were. Mortgage debt meant you were making a leveraged bet on the housing market. As housing prices were rising, you were multiplying your money. Well, the New York Times reports that another group of dum-dums is making a similar mistake. Debt has become a way of life for American college students. The average student loan debt among graduating college seniors was more than $23,000 in 2008, according to FinAid.org. In addition, the student lender, Sally Mae, says the average graduating senior with at least one credit card had $4,138 in debt on the card. Yet, instead of feeling stressed about owing all that money, many students actually feel empowered, says a new study from Ohio State University based on data collected for the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. The study, published in the journal Social Science Research, surveyed 3,079 students, the majority of whom were in their early to mid-20s. That's right, the more college loans and credit card debt that young adults age 18 to 27 have, the higher their self-esteem and the more control they feel they have over their lives. They tend to view debt positively rather than as a burden. Rachel Dwyer, an assistant professor of sociology at Ohio State and the study's lead author, says it's not entirely clear why debt seems to have that effect. But the finding is consistent with earlier research suggesting that student loans in particular represent the cost of opportunity for some students and so can be seen in a positive light. And I quote from her, "Educational debt can represent an investment in the future." There are signs, though, that the glow wears off as the students put more distance between themselves and their college days. Perhaps because they're starting to make payments on the loans and maybe beginning to realize that their salary doesn't go as far as they may have thought. The oldest of those studies, age 28 to 34, began showing signs of stress about the money they owed. According to Professor Dwyer, they're experiencing the burden of repayment versus the pleasure of going to college. You know, I should say so, unfortunately. Well, I hope that this has been an interesting evening for you, or rather day for you, ladies and gentlemen. I will be checking in with the Singapore Telephone Company either tomorrow or Monday, and we shall be making further experiments with the system. It has been apparently an extremely complicated task to try to find out why we're having so much trouble on the system. But I must congratulate the Singapore crew. They are doing their very best to deal with this. They have gone through just about every possible problem that could befall an office trying to make VOIP telephone calls, but apparently have not found anything worthy of consideration. But hopefully by the end of next week, at least, we shall have got somewhere close to having solved this very horrible problem. So I get this from Stephen Feister. I'm just seeing if I can get this up. Oh, it's rather long. I shall have to leave it until Monday. But ladies and gentlemen, I've got a nice little quiz for you, which Steve has generously contributed to the company present. So I shall give it to you on Monday. Well, listen, it just remains for me to wish you a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to talking to you on Monday. So this is Richard Martin of the Wake Up Call wishing you all the best, and I'll be back with you then. Take care. Bye-bye.